The following interview was conducted on behalf of the Oral History Project of the Century High School. The interviewee is Betsy Biller. The interviewer is Talisha Savage. The interview took place at the Hillsborough Administration Office on Monday, May 16th at 1 o'clock. So, I was wondering how long you have lived in Hillsborough.
I have worked in Hillsborough for 29 years. I don't live in Hillsborough any longer. I moved from Hillsborough in about 1992.
Okay. And so you basically witnessed the happenings of Hillsborough from 1980 to 1992?
I sure did.
And have you been able to, like, do you basically know what's going on since 1992 in Hillsborough?
I believe I do.
Okay. How often do you deal with criminals?
You know, I don't deal with criminals very often. However, because Hillsborough is the county seat, there are a number of agencies that work on behalf of criminals, criminal rehabilitation, juvenile crime prevention, and I interface with those groups a lot. We supply a staff member to work at Harkins House, which is a residential center for students, youth who are waiting to go through the court system. May not necessarily Hillsborough, they can be anywhere in Washington County because it's the Washington County facility.
Okay. And so you've been in touch, when did these programs start?
I'm actually not sure when Harkins House started. My awareness of Harkins House and the juvenile crime prevention began pretty much in 1992 because I came to the district office from work at a middle school.
Okay. So, do you personally feel safe in the Hillsborough area, Washington County area?
I do. I feel safe for a number of reasons. I think that people who don't deal with kids at all and stay removed from kids are sometimes put off by the appearances that they may give. Someone may have spiky hair and wear some kind of a strange collar or weird jewelry or tattoos or clothes that sort of scream intimidation. And to me, those are just kids in funny clothes. And I'm always friendly to them, and they may be suspect about, you know, why is that weird old woman being nice to them? But that's the way to approach people. It's just the costume they happen to be wearing, and I have to treat them as kids that are here to learn. I see that in the community as well. There are some people who are put off by the gathering, the social networking that occurs in the area in Hillsborough where a lot of Hispanic families live. And yet if you go to Mexico or any of the countries where Latinos live, that is part of their social culture, is to congregate, is it's warm outside. I don't want to sit inside being hot alone. I want to be out front where things are happening. That doesn't intimidate me. We need to get other people to learn to not be intimidated by that. I am careful. I am watchful about some of the things that could be random violence. In a parking lot at night, I park near an entrance. I carry my keys with the pointy things sticking out. I carry my purse close to me. I don't leave things open in the car. I lock my doors at night when I'm at home, those kinds of things. But I'm not afraid.
And have you felt safer over the years or less safe with, you know, maybe the increase in population?
I really don't believe that I have felt a loss of safety. I sometimes worry for older people because I think that they are susceptible targets for an opportunistic attack, maybe pushing an older person down to steal a purse or a wallet or something like that, where the loss of the wallet could be minimal compared to the physical damage. That makes me nervous for them. But for my personal safety or for the safety of my children, I really don't have that big of a concern.
And do you feel that the community has become, do you feel that they would maybe feel safer, as you know, now with the more law enforcement than back in 1980?
I don't think so. I think that there is a tendency on the part of different individuals and groups of individuals to tighten their ranks in order to form a little protection, that the little neighborhood association feels safe because they know each other and they have this little block homes or whatever. But as long as you're my neighbor, you're okay. But if you're not my neighbor, then, oh, I'm going to watch out for you. I think we have a little more divide between groups, whether they are groups of more financially prosperous versus the poor, or the whites and Hispanics, or an influx of other minority population, people who speak English or don't speak English. I'm afraid we've got a pretty good divide that makes a lack of trust sort of permeate some of the areas.
And has there been a change in time with those segregation?
I think so. When I first started working here, Hillsborough was a very small community. It had a small feel of a community. We had, what was then the high school district, we had four schools. We had Hill High, we had Mid High, we had Brown, and we had Poynter. That's it. And when we unified in 1996 and became a larger district, and then Open Century and Liberty and the other elementary schools that we've opened, we've become a larger and larger area. And we are a big area where we have downtown Hillsborough that really does identify themselves as being in the little city of Hillsborough. But in Reedville, for example, some of those people don't really consider that they are Hillsborough residents very much. They don't come into Hillsborough for their services. They may tend to go to Beaverton or to other areas for services. So there, it's difficult to have a community feel build up, and I think the community feel is the best thing to have people value differences and not be afraid. As we've become a larger community, some things have come into the community, like drugs, for example. The methamphetamines is a huge concern, and the methamphetamines that leads to identity theft, that leads to violence. I am concerned that we get that curbed and stopped. But my tendency seems to be more of, we need to get the meth cycle broken down so that not one more kid gets involved in it and wrecks their life, as opposed to, I'm afraid someone's going to steal something from me.
What do you think the three biggest changes have been over the last 25 years in Hillsborough?
In regards to?
Law enforcement and crime.
One of the big things that has happened in relation to law enforcement is the school resource officer program. We used to have police officers that came to school when we had a problem. They responded, they were pretty responsive, but I may know them, I may not know them. With the school resource officers, and I think you guys have Pat Hess, is that correct? Yeah, you know Pat Hess.
Yeah.
I mean, Pat Hess is just like, he's just there. He was also my school resource officer when I was a vice principal at Poynter as well. It got so that the kids knew that was a good person. That was a person that if they had a quiet problem, they could talk to. And it didn't have to be the big, oh, he's the cop kind of mentality. That is a huge thing, to put the kids and the cops together in a positive situation. I like that a lot. The sheer number of police officers that are necessary to protect a community as large and population as large as Hillsborough, that's amazing, because a lot of people, including me, probably still think of Hillsborough being kind of a little town. And you know, you've got the East Precinct, and you've got the 10th Street, and so on. In regards to the, probably the third thing is the incarceration. The cost of incarceration is so expensive. And with the budget problems that the state has, it either sucks up more of the state money to punish people and to keep them away from us, or there isn't enough money and they're released onto the streets before they're rehabilitated and they know that they can get away with it, and so it doesn't prevent crime from being recommitted.
Mm-hmm.
Those are big.
And what do you think the differences are in the crimes that have been committed over the last 25 years?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a big change in what's going on?
Well, I remember a murder that happened in the late 80s in Hillsborough. It was such a shock. It was such a shock, because you just didn't really have that very often. It was a random murder of an elderly lady. And there was a lot of speculation about who could be involved in that. And at that time, there was a resurgence of some gang activity. And of course, everyone wants to point at what they don't understand. And so they were sure it was gang activity. And it turned out that it wasn't. But I remember how distressing that was. There had been a few events that were criminal in nature that were really shocking to the community. And they can serve to bring people together, and they can serve to tear people apart, you know, all at the same time.
So before it was a more, it was a less excessive and
I think that the violent crime was something you just didn't hear about.
And now it's more.
And now you hear about it all the time.
Yeah.
You've got your shootings at spring break, and you've got your fights from one house to another. You've got a body found in an apartment. And it's a little more common to hear that in the news.
And what right now are the biggest crime issues, and how are they being dealt with? And like, put it into perspective of back then, what were the bigger issues, mm-hmm. and how would they be dealt with?
When I started working here, I would say that the drug of choice was probably alcohol or maybe marijuana. The fear now that kids have access to methamphetamines and that is so devastating is frightening. Being alcohol is still something that as school people were really concerned about. So the meth and the related crimes that go with it are a problem. Gang involvement in the late 80s appeared to be more of a situation of kids who didn't connect with everyone else banding together and forming a group that made them feel important and made them feel like they belonged. What appears now is that the gang influence seems to be a little more willing to be violent, a little more likely to be well-armed, a little more likely to be involved in some pretty heavy money-making through drugs or other activities, and as a result, they're willing to stand up against the side of right a little more. They're more willing to be violent. Those are terribly important. What else? The identity theft, while that is not a violent crime, it is a real serious problem that passes costs on in every way to every consumer. And it's a silent, it's invisible. You don't even know it's happening because you pay for those clothes and you don't realize that part of the cost is covering the losses they have when people buy the clothes with false ID and they end up not getting money for it.
And so there has been an increase in that kind of crime?
Huge increase. Yes, huge increase. And they have whole task forces that are trying to figure out how to curb it, and you're hearing all the time about shred your paperwork and don't put your bills in an open bin, get them into a closed locked mailbox when you send them, don't leave your mailbox unlocked because the mail can be stolen, etc.
Do you think that there's been an increase in stricter punishment, or what kind of in the punishment that you would normally see for maybe like juveniles? Or
I really appreciate that question. There's Measure 11. Have you guys talked about Measure 11 at all? Measure 11, they put a number on a ballot measure. Ballot Measure 11 came up, and it was mandatory sentencing for certain crimes. Mandatory sentencing for an assault involving a burglary or a theft might mean that you have a bicycle I like, I knock you down and you get a cut, but I knocked you down to take your bicycle. And I would spend a minimum of 7 years in prison for that crime. To me, that is a reaction to Oregonians saying we can't control crime, so we're just going to lock it up in a place where we don't want to think about it. We have built, I can't tell you how many prisons and jails, added how many prison beds, and so on. Hired the staff that it takes to man them and so on, while funding for schools has gone down. And to me, Oregon has got it all wrong. McLaren, when I was a child, McLaren County Woodburn was a place for juvenile boy offenders. And they were troubled kids. They were kids who got into trouble, who disrupted their neighborhoods and so on. It's where murderers go now. It's where kids who are willing to assault, attack, rape, whatever, are there. It's like a developmental prison or something. It's just awful because that has elevated. Okay, can you put me on hold for 1 second?
Yeah.
Measure 11 took away judges' discretion about a crime. You might be the best kid in the whole world, mm-hmm. and you one night do something stupid, harmless, stupid prank, and someone gets hurt. Is it really going to serve you best to send you to prison for 7 years when nothing about your life up until then showed that you were on your way to prison? Nothing about the kid you've been says that you belong in prison, and so on. A dumb, stupid, irresponsible, punishable, yes. Prison, no. But that's what Measure 11 has done. It has taken money from other sources, and it has built a punitive rather than a rehabilitative program. And I think that is just fundamentally wrong. It's sponsored by a man whose daughter was killed by a guy in Lake Oswego. He just decided to drive his car into her to see what it would be like, and he killed her. Yes, that's terrible. That is horrible. That does deserve to be punished. But every kid who makes a mistake that isn't doesn't cause a death, etc., doesn't deserve to go to prison for something.
So, you feel that the community is becoming, they're scared, and so they're just like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, it's basically gotten scared of criminals. And
I think so. When a measure comes up on the ballot in November, there was a safety measure for sheriff and fire, and there was a school measure to get the local option to get more money in for schools. I sat on a committee at the Chamber of Commerce, that's the business people that were there. And they considered those measures, and others, library, and so on. They considered them, and their job was to say whether they endorsed it or they didn't endorse it, and then they were going to let people know in writing that the chamber endorses such and such a measure. I could talk till I'm blue in the face for the school measure. I'm also on the library board, and I talked about those also.
Mm-hmm.
The safety measure came up. Boom! Yes, we scored it. Didn't matter how much it was, didn't how much it was going to cost them, didn't matter what they were going to get out of it. No one had to be there to say, we need this, or we're going to lose X firemen, or you're going to have 7,000 houses per fireman, or anything like that. Yes, pass it. But not schools and libraries. That's probably a pretty good example. Just keep me safe by keeping those away from me.
What do you think about the community awareness of this going on, like of the juvenile violence and crimes that are happening?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they have become more aware of it or less aware of it?
I think that some of the general public overgeneralize what they think about juvenile crime, so that all groups of kids might make them nervous, so they may tend to fear any groups of kids that they are not personally familiar with. It's part of that divide that I talked about earlier that I see happening. Because we tend to drive into our homes, raise the garage door, park the car, lower the garage door, we tend not to know our neighbors with all of their oddities and figure out that they may be weird, but they're pretty nice people and they aren't going to hurt me. We tend to be so isolated that we tend to be afraid of other people.
So that's increase.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so have you seen or been aware of any kind of racial profiling or like changes in racial profiling?
I have not been aware of racial profiling in the term that I see it on my TV shows, you know, that the cops are stopping people that have a particular look, appearance, or whatever. But I think that the general public, some members of the general public have a tendency to do some racial profiling. On the Oregon Live website, the forum page about Hillsborough, some of the stuff that was written about Hispanics in there was absolutely hateful. To me, those people need to be locked up. And that is absolutely without cause or without foundation. The other day I stopped at a drive-thru to pick up some lunch, and the young lady that waited on me had the most beautiful accent, and I commented on it, and she said, most people like you don't think this is pretty at all. And that, you know, just this divide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know that the police are involved in it. The police, Hillsborough police, have tried to bring in people of different race. They've tried to do trainings. There is an Understanding Racism Foundation that has actually done a whole course for kids and staff at Century that's really powerful stuff, because you need to break down those walls so that you see people for people rather than for the color of the skin or the way they dress.
So basically, like, the head honchos and the government is trying to, you know, reduce it, but the community is kind of just pushing it back.
I believe that that's probably a pretty fair example.
And do you feel the government's been there from 1980 to present? The government has been taking more role in dealing with
it? Yeah, I think it's probably more from 1995 until present that the government is really making a strong effort. And part of that is the economy. If you had the statistics about the economy in Hillsborough and the number of small businesses, you would be amazed at how many small businesses are Hispanic-based businesses. So the community is finally figuring out that this is an economic factor that can't be ignored, and if they do ignore it, they're crazy. So they need to bring them in. Well, the city governs the police, the county governs the area also. They're working to try to improve the standing of all citizens in the community.
How do you feel that the media conveys juvenile crimes and and the crimes committed in school?
Do you ever see me on television? Have you ever seen me on television?
No.
One of my jobs, you lucky girl. One of my jobs is that when there is a problem, or whether we've got lice or a whooping cough or a gun or a knife or a fire or anything, I'm the one that the media interviews. And they can come up with some of the dumbest things that they want to talk about. You know, first of all, they want more information than they're entitled to have. My goal is to, if there is something going on, my goal is to make the principal and the staff able to deal with the problem, not the media. Then I want accurate information that I can share so that the parents of the kids who go to that particular school or who live in this community have a degree of reassurance that we're taking care of the problem. And I hope that they understand that we don't have absolute, infinite control over everything that happens. I will often say that I would venture that one of our schools is a safer place than sending your child to the mall, where people haven't had background checks, aren't supervising, aren't watching out for other people throughout the day, and so on. Nevertheless, the media tends to blow some things out of proportion. I can think of a story last year that one of the media that I respected highly was trying to create a huge thing saying that, and her lead was, did you know that your child could be going to school with a sexual predator? I don't know if you're familiar with that story, but it was a situation where, in order for me to refute what she said, I would have had to have given personal information about the child she was talking about, and I couldn't do that. So I was stuck with not being able to defend the person that she was talking about because I couldn't reach confidence. And so she ran with the story. She held the story 3 months from the time she did the interview until Sweeps Week, when she advertised that it was coming on the news, and she ran it. Then you tell me that that's not manipulating the information.
Yes. And so, do you believe that it's like the increase in technology and stuff like that, there's been an increase in the media?
Brutal.
Of how they...
Absolutely brutal. Yes. I was in a staff meeting when Kip Kinkle shot people at Thurston High School. And one of our staff people here, her husband is a freelance photographer, he got buzzed by the Associated Press and said, however you can get to Springfield, we've got a school shooting. We had that information before it was on the news. There had been a school shooting. We had no idea who, how much, how bad it was, what the circumstances were. The media has got, People Magazine has people throughout Portland metropolitan area that send in story ideas and stuff. People are always looking to beat somebody with the story. So, yeah, I think the electronics have made it very difficult.
So, yeah.
Another thing that I would point out is that our neighbors from in our cul-de-sac are Canadian and German. And they compared the news in their countries to the news here. The news in their countries are about other countries and about other projects that are going on and about things of substance. And ours is more like the tabloids. Our news is just tabloids.
Yeah, very much so.
Welcome to Jerry Springer Live.
So, what would you think is the biggest cause of crime in the Hillsborough area?
What? I think that might be too bad for me to be able to handle.
Well, what's the biggest problem with the juvenile?
When kids get together and collectively they're, you know, they're quite as correlated when they're hard. Peer influence. Possibly insufficient parental supervision. There's an ad that's running on TV lately where the kid is saying to the dad, I can't believe they don't let me go to part of this because there aren't parents here. You know, and the kid does a good job arguing for it. I mean, you know, some parents really give in on that one. Then he goes and picks up the phone and tells his friend it didn't work for him either. When kids are supervised and when kids have positive role models and when kids have positive choices to make, it's almost like a momentum that's built up that they do good things, as opposed to negative role models, uncertainty in their family, lack of supervision, lack of direction, and they can find things to do that seem small and ultimately can lead to feeling pretty comfortable breaking the law.
Do you feel that there's an increase in parents' participation?
I think the parents that participate more than they ever did. But more and more parents are like me, and both parents are at work, or there's a single parent who's trying to hold things together and is working really, really hard to try to keep food on the table and house up over their heads. I think that the strain of the economy causes strain in families, and that leads to some fractures that cause people to make poor decisions or lead people to make poor decisions. So I think that more and more of our kids are kind of unsupervised. Mm-hmm. I saw it as a vice principal at a middle school where you would ask parents to volunteer and you get the kids saying, oh yeah, mom, no, mom can't come. In fact, I have two kids. My daughter didn't want me to volunteer at her things, and my son always did. Same parents, same mom, different kids. It's just, mm-hmm. You know, that's what there was. And I found that my son's friends were always happy to have me there and treated me like I was a reasonably normal person. And I always wanted to be the parent that my daughter wanted to be there, but she just always had this little, no, I'm going to wait and see if other parents are going to do it. But it never made a difference to her to say, yeah, mom, come on over. Parents need to be involved, and they need to tell their kids, sorry, but you don't have a choice. I'm in. I'm going on the field trip. I'm going to the all-night party. I'm doing, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's been commercials about having parents, you know, talking to your kids about drugs. Mm-hmm. Do you think, you know, them in doing that has increased the involvement in parents? Do you think it actually has worked?
For some, yes. And I think for any that it works for, it's worth it. If, as a teacher and as somebody who was activities director for so long, talking with kids about tough stuff doesn't seem intimidating to me. Talking with my own kids didn't seem intimidating to me. I think it is intimidating for some folks, and any help that they can get, I think, makes it easier for them. Does everybody do it? No. We have parents who will argue with us and pull their kids from certain units and certain classes because they don't feel the school should be instructing them, and yet you've got to hope that the parent is doing it instead.
Well, back to the major cause of the crimes. Well, in 1980, what do you think the whole juvenile crime, what was the major, most major causes of the problems?
Social drinking, lack of alternative activities to do. Where did you go in Hillsborough if it was Friday night and you were 17 and there was no game and somebody wasn't having a dance at school? What is there to do?
But because of now, Hillsborough is a lot bigger and has more stuff to do. Yeah. There's less, you know, pressure. And
I don't know.
Well, have you noticed any changes in drug use in school over the past 25 years?
I think it would be safe to say that we didn't used to ever find some of the drugs that I consider to be more risky. Crack, for example. I'm trying to think about the incidents. I do a survey every year, the student survey and drug alcohol and so on. I do that one, and I'm trying to think about if there has been an increase. It has stayed fairly flat in the report of alcohol and tobacco and marijuana. There's been a slight increase in amphetamines and in crack. Slight increase in it. So I don't personally see the effect, but the survey would indicate that there is a slight increase.
Okay. And, well, is there anything else you wanted to tell me that I haven't already asked about?
Another thing that I also noticed in that survey is a jump from sixth grade, which is the first grade that we administer that survey, up to through grade 10. That's when the involvement in those activities takes a jump. So then as a teacher, that tells me parents and teachers need to be talking in that very critical time about some alternative things for kids to be getting involved in to divert them from that.
And do you think the DARE program and programs like that have been helping?
I do. The problem is that I don't think any program is the answer to everything, but a DARE program may be good for a group of kids that just brings in a different person to do the teaching about staying away from drugs, alcohol, and gangs, as opposed to their teacher who was, you know, cute little flower dressing to read. It may carry more weight for them. But I think that true prevention requires a whole array of tools. The survey would also say, the question is, where have you received valuable information about the dangers of drugs and alcohol? And the DARE program is one of those. Parents, teachers, ministers, my friends are other ones. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is very fun. Did I answer your questions?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.